The order seemed to snap the soldiers out of their sickness, forcing them to focus on the defense or wind up in even worse shape. Nathan felt the shield begin to subside, a pressure he hadn't realized was there, lifting away from him. The pile of dead trife tumbled inward, knocking the living front of the wave off balance and throwing them forward into the base of the wall. The front line of soldiers aimed straight down off the edge, hundreds of guns firing into the masses. The wall shook from the sound and force, and thousands of trife died in the first few seconds, torn apart by the massive barrage. Nathan didn't waste his rounds shooting into single trife below. Instead, he aimed further out, launching large rounds at the enemy powerful enough to rip through multiple targets before their kinetic energy was spent. He kept a steady stream going, adjusting his aim and killing hundreds on his own. It was impressive. It also wasn't enough. The demons surged forward with renewed effort, hissing more loudly as they began latching into the crushed metal of the wall and began to climb. The soldiers executed well, the front line dropping back to reload as the back line came forward, rotating firepower so there was never a break. Thousands of trife died at the base of the wall, but thousands more were there to back them up. Nathan jumped down off the wall to reload from the truck, quickly changing out his ammo box for a fresh one. He leaped back up, making it just as the first of the trife came over the top, hissing and lunging at Colonel Daw. The colonel barely flinched before shooting the first demon in the head. Nathan started shooting again, firing downward now to cut through the climbing trife. He took out entire rows at once, but the slick was like a rising tide against the bulwark, still pressing forward and threatening to overwhelm them. He heard his first human scream a moment later, as someone on the line was grabbed by a trife and thrown from the wall down into the mix. The same thing happened again and again. His people beginning to die.
"Pyro," Nathan said, "we need support."
"Already on it," she replied.
The dropship streaked toward the field. With its load of cluster rockets spent, Pyro fired the four plasma cannons, the large bolts shooting into the middle of the dark army, killing dozens. A trife climbed over the wall right in front of Nathan. It rushed him, mouth open to rip him to shreds. Nathan met it with a metal fist. He broke its neck and threw it back off the wall. A second appeared a moment later, killed by a bullet from Colonel Daw.
"General," Lieutenant Burke said, "the southern flank is strained. The enemy is about to break through."
"Daw," Nathan snapped, "move the platoons down to cover the flank. Thin out the center. I'll hold it."
"Yes, General," Daw replied, still shooting as he sent out new orders.
"Burke, call up the reserves. They need to hit anything that gets over the wall."
"Yes, General," Burke said.
Nathan's heart started pumping harder. They were standing firm, but there was just too many of them. The soldiers began shifting on the wall, moving laterally to shore up the weakened flank. It left fewer fighters around him, putting pressure on him to hold the middle and keep the trife from breaching the gates. Nathan glanced at the status display inside his helmet, noticing he was nearly out of ammo. Again. He fired one last barrage into the climbing trife before jumping backward, using his armor's jets to land smoothly next to the truck. He dropped the used box and grabbed a new one, needing only a few seconds to reload. The dropship soared overhead, completing another strafing run along the line of aliens. Nathan heard a scream, and Colonel Daw's body dropped from the back of the wall, three trife still biting and clawing at him.
"Damn it,"
Nathan cursed. More trife leaping down from the wall. Another group began hitting the gates, hissing and clawing at them to pierce the metal.
"Burke, I need reinforcements on the gate."
"General, the reserve is en route, but you need to hold until they can get to you."
Nathan fired at the demons coming over the wall, killing a few. Another of his fighters was thrown to the ground beside him, dead. Had he made the right decision to relocate forces away from the center to shore up the flanks? Was it possible the trife had shifted the intensity of their attack from the outside to the middle with such precision? He knew it was possible. The creatures were smarter than they seemed. He had to do something, or it would be his fault when everyone in Edenrise died. His eyes landed on the ammo truck. It was a risk, but he had to take it. He swung his rifle around to his back where it snapped to the bulge of the power supply. Then he crouched down, getting his hands under the ammo truck and lifting. The powered armor made him strong, but it was still a strain to lift the heavy vehicle,
and more of a strain to keep it balanced. He managed to get it positioned over his head, and he started walking it toward the gate. Trife were breaking over the wall as he carried the truck, a few dozen clearing his area and breaking toward the city. He regretted losing the people they would kill, but they would lose a lot more if he didn't take drastic action. He made it to the gate and threw the truck down behind the rows of bars, hitting the barrier with a loud clang. The Trife barely reacted. They were so intent on cutting through the bars they hardly noticed. A number of the crossbars were already sliced through, and a few of the demons were attempting to squeeze through the gaps. Nathan grabbed his rifle again as he backed away. He switched to the secondary trigger, still retreating. Then he pulled it. A soft thunk and a dark round ball shot from the lower barrel of the gun, hitting the truck a moment later. It didn't rebound, instead sticking there, a small LED quickly flashing red. Nathan pulled the trigger again and the ball exploded out of the muzzle. Firing his jets, he was already leaping skyward, arcing for the top of the wall when it detonated. The explosion set off the rifle rounds inside the truck and blew all of the Trife back from the gate. Scores of Trife hands reached wildly through the twisted bars and around the smoking remains of the truck. Hundreds of Trife were killed immediately, and more continued to fall as slugs slammed down into them from above, finally cutting a hole in the slick. Nathan didn't stop there. He ran across the wall, his prosthetic arm outstretched, gathering up as many Trife coming over the wall as he could. He let them bite down on his metal arm and dragged them to the opposite edge of the wall. There, he pulled them down with him as he leaped into the vacated hole.
"For Eden Rise,"
he shouted into his comm, hoping to inspire his people. He hit the ground hard, crushing the Trife he had gathered beneath his armor as he rolled over and back to his feet. He started shooting those still moving, turning in a wide semicircle, his slugs cutting down dozens of demons with each round and keeping the gate clear. He couldn't hold the horde at bay forever. When he ran out of ammo, it would be all over, at least for him. But if he could buy enough time for the reserves to arrive, maybe they would have a chance. He kept shooting, cutting down swaths of Trife as the seconds ticked past. It didn't take long for his rifle to run dry, and when it did, he turned it in his grip, holding it like a club. The Trife charged at him hundreds thick. He began swinging his weapon, smashing into them and batting them away. Dozens fell to his assault, but he couldn't keep them back forever. They grabbed his legs and jumped on his back, slashing and clawing at his hardened armor, their claws struggling to break through the other's material. He grabbed them, crushing their bodies in his powerful hands, fighting to stay upright as they continued to swarm over him. Suddenly, he was off his feet and on his back. His armored weight and that of the Trife coming down on top of him crushed the demons at his back. For an instant, before they engulfed him, he caught sight of the dropship coming over for another strafing run. And then all he saw was biting teeth and slashing claws. 28. Caleb.
"They can't hold much longer," Caleb said. "Over half the Trife are destroyed. It is an impressive display. A wasted effort if they all die. They deserve better. What can we do? We are only human. You saw the shield. They have a QDM. Tell me we can't use that somehow." "We could use it, but we'll never reach it." Caleb refused to believe that. "You can refuse all you want. It doesn't change the truth." It was just like Ishek to be negative. It was the aspect of the symbiote Caleb was most glad he hadn't inherited. He had never given up on a chance to save human lives before. Not as a Marine Raider, not as search and rescue, not as a guardian on the Deliverance, and not now. He had spent the last 30 minutes waiting at the base of a small hill outside of town for the Trife army to arrive. He had stopped there to marvel at the tall spire rising out of the center of the city, as if a god had planted a spear in it. The blue tinge to the air around the city and the displacement of the energy shield protecting it. He had expected to find something more advanced and secure than the random villages and settlements he had encountered so far, but this was so much more than that.
Whoever had built the city had somehow come into possession of a quantum dimensional modulator, an energy unit capable of producing a near-infinite supply of power through a link to an alternate dimension. It was an Axon invention, the power generator they used for all their energy needs. The aliens were so advanced they produced the complex devices like trinkets, putting them in every ship they made regardless of the precise power requirements. Even so, the units weren't common outside of Axon control. That someone here had discovered one, and even more importantly figured out how to put it to use, was impressive. And it provided Caleb a measure of hope that just because centuries had passed since Earth was overrun, it didn't mean humankind had given up. It didn't mean the planet was lost. It was in trouble, though. The massive attack had led the shields to fail, leaving the defense to a line of men and women standing on a makeshift barrier and doing their best to hold back a rising tide. He respected their courage. He had seen plenty of Marines he thought were tougher than nails break at the sight of a handful of Trife, never mind nearly 60,000. "If I get us to the modulator, can you end the fight with it?" Caleb asked. "No guarantees, but the possibility exists." Caleb rose from his hiding place. He had already spotted the armor he had encountered earlier standing on the wall, blowing the hell out of the enemy. Watching it work, he was confident it wasn't a robot, but either the leader of the city or perhaps their top military officer, as he had stood in one of the hardest spots to defend and had already dispatched some of the soldiers around it to stall a tri-flanking maneuver. "It's a ruse." Ishek was convinced the flank was a trick and the attack would regain the center. Maybe the Relia advocate was right. Caleb didn't care. He only had one mission now. Get to the modulator. Save the city. He found the armor again, holding the center almost alone. He glanced up when he heard the dropship arrive overhead, static for a moment, while he watched it blast the Trife with plasma cannons. He would have given anything for a craft like that when he was running search and rescue through war zones during the initial Trife invasion. Would they have even lost the war if they'd had a weapon like that back then? "Yes." "Shut up," Caleb said. He activated the skin's projection, changing his outward appearance back into the Trife he had scanned. Maybe Ishek was right about that too. Again, it didn't matter. They couldn't change the past. He sprinted down the slope toward the rear of the enemy lines. Within seconds of reaching the slick, he began pushing his way through, drawing angry hisses from the demons around him. He climbed onto one's shoulders and stomped across them as though they were a living road. Some of them grabbed at him, trying to pull him down, but he hurried over them too quickly for them to get hold of him, his stamina increased by the chemicals Ishek pumped into his body. He made it halfway to the front inside of 30 seconds, dropping back to the ground among the demons. He paused with them when he heard the dropship's thrusters increasing in volume, signaling the craft was returning. The skin gave its position on his HUD. It was coming right for him, preparing to strafe the line.
"Wouldn't that be ironic after everything you've been through? Gunned down by friendly fire."
Sometimes Caleb regretted his bond to the Advocate. This was one of those times.
"I kept you alive when you would have died. Don't forget that."
Caleb had done the same for Ishek. The Advocate shouldn't forget that either.
"Completely different circumstances."
Caleb smiled, recalling those circumstances. Only for a moment. The dropship was swooping in, plasma spewing from its cannons. The Trife ahead of them were being blasted into the air, burned and torn apart. He didn't want to suffer the same fate. He crouched, ready to move in any direction. The plasma blasts descended. He broke right, leaping and pushing off the side of a Trife, slamming into a second, rolling away from him and springing forward. A plasma bolt hit the ground a few meters away, causing the Trife there to scream and die. He felt the heat of the gas wash over him, along with a strong whiff of burning flesh. The force knocked him down, but didn't pierce the skin. A loud crackling rumble followed, the sound of the armor's rifle rapid firing. Caleb was closer than he thought, closer than he wanted to be. He turned toward the origin of the noise as slugs began cutting through the nearby Trife, tearing the aliens in half as they sliced past him. Caleb threw himself down, staying low, while the barrage continued, tearing the trife nearby apart. It only lasted a few seconds. The gun ran out of ammunition, and the trife immediately began to close in. Caleb heard the armor moving, and then the cracking of bones and the pounding of flesh. Claws and teeth scraped metal. Caleb got back to his feet, trying to join the press of trife bodies as it moved in on the armored soldier. The man went down under a pile of trife. Dozens of the demons stayed with him, slashing and biting, while the rest continued through the damaged gates and into the city. Caleb glanced up. The creatures were beginning to make progress on the walls as well, the soldiers defending them falling at an increasing pace. They had put up a good fight, a brave fight. But the end was coming.
"It's too late. We can't save them. We need to leave this place."
Even if that were true, they couldn't leave the QDM to fall into Relia possession. The Trife army would triple in size within weeks with access to that much energy.
"Good point."
Caleb checked the skin's power supply. Judicious use over the last few months had minimized the drain. It still held 70% of its stored energy. But he didn't need to conserve it anymore. There was a QDM only a few kilometers away. The Axon power source could recharge his skin in seconds.
"It still won't be enough to stop the assault.
But it might help him save some of the people, starting with the one in the armor." He activated the skin's weapon systems, charging them at full power. The action caused the projection to fall away, immediately alerting the trife to an enemy in their midst. The group closest to him hissed and changed direction, leaping at him with slashing claws. He threw his hands out, the energy flowing from every nodule of the skin. The nearest wave of trife was thrown back, 100 or more killed in the blast that immediately drained 10% of the power supply, but also gave Caleb seconds to reach the armored warrior. He sprinted forward, grabbing the trife that turned to stop him. Each time his hand touched one of them, a shot of energy raced through his palm and into their bodies, killing them nearly instantly. He barreled through the immediate crowd of trife like a linebacker, shoving the demons aside, jumping over them, and finally making it to the pile. He hesitated a moment, hoping the mech's armor would absorb the blast before sending a shockwave of energy through the trife. Dozens of the trife died on top of the soldier's armor, leaving him buried. Caleb checked his HUD. He had drained nearly 25% of his power in a dozen seconds. Ishek was right. He couldn't stop the assault on his own even with the skin. It was powerful, but it was intended to be worn by an Axon intellect with a much larger secondary power supply.
"Marine!" he shouted, hoping the person in the armor could hear him. "Get up! Let's move!"
He turned to grab an oncoming trife, throwing it aside. He kicked another and blasted energy at a third, fourth, and fifth.
"Marine!" he shouted again. "The city needs you!"
He glanced back at the pile of dead trife. Had his attack inadvertently killed the Marine? Had the trife gotten to him first? Then the pile began to shift. A dozen dead alien corpses were pushed aside as the armored soldier pushed himself up, first to a knee and then to his full height, towering over Caleb. The armor was badly scratched and gouged, and a deep crack ran along the dark visor, but it was still intact. They stared at one another for a moment.
"Who are you?"
the armored man said, his voice choppy through a single damaged external speaker.
"Sergeant Caleb Card, United States Space Force Marines. Get me to that spire and I might be able to help you save your city."
29. Caleb. The armored man regarded Caleb.
"General Stacker," he said. "I'm sorry for trying to kill you before, but
Stacker, wasn't he?"
Of course, Ishek knew who General Stacker was to Caleb. The advocate could read his mind. One of the most respected officers in the military during the original Trife invasion. The government had tried to get him to leave Earth on one of the generation ships. He had refused to go. He refused to believe Earth was lost. He refused to keep fighting. But that Stacker would currently be over 200 years old. Whoever this man was, he wasn't the original General Stacker.
It didn't matter right now. They had to survive the onslaught first, then he would worry about the man's true identity.
Understood, Caleb replied, not paying particular attention to his apology. We can save apologies for later, sir. Right now we need to get to the spire.
He spun around, putting his hands together and launching an energy blast into the trife there, killing four of them.
Follow me, Stacker said.
He started running toward the city gates, following the trife. Gunshots rang out in the distance as a secondary city defense began shooting at the incoming demons. Caleb sprinted behind Stacker, impressed by the speed and agility of his powered armor. They plowed through the trife, coming up on them from behind and staying away from the others at the rear. Stacker grabbed any of the demons he was able to reach on the way past, crushing them in powerful hands and leaving corpses behind. They reached the damaged gates. So many trife were pouring through, and so many corpses littered the area it had created a jam on the other side. Gunfire sounded close by, and entire lines of trife dropped in front of them, the shooters on the wall refocusing on their path ahead. Stacker had to be communicating with them, sending them orders to help clear the way.
Ish, can the skin get into Stacker's comps?
I have tried. The encryption is improved from your conventional systems. I would almost call it Axon hardened.
So Stacker knew something about the Axon and had developed hack-resistant comms.
It certainly appears that way.
They made it to the other side of the gate. Stacker plowed through the trife, kicking and shoving bodies out of the way to continue toward the spire. Soldiers were coming down off the walls, forming up on their position to defend. They were a ragged, tired-looking bunch, some of them covered in the blood of trife and their dead comrades. It was hard to believe the battle had only been in progress for as little as 10 minutes.
Caleb!
Ishek's cry caused Caleb to stumble and nearly fall, the sudden pressure in his head almost overwhelming. He slowed slightly, recovering just in time to bat away a trife that had made it through their defenses.
We have a problem. A big problem. Tell Stacker if he can to get his people out of here. He needs to do it now.
What's going on? Now, Caleb!
Caleb opened his mouth to shout out to Stacker. At the same time, all of the trife seemed to freeze at once. Even the air around them seemed to freeze, the atmosphere signaling that something was very wrong. The soldiers stopped shooting moments later, nearly every living thing on the battlefield coming to a stop. The trife lifted their heads, looking back the way they had come. Caleb looked back too. It was hard to see past the trife. There was something out there. Something in the distance. Something rumbling and groaning in an alien staccato that made his spine shiver.
General, he said, echoing Ishek. If you can get your people out of here, you need to do it now, right now.
The trife suddenly started moving again. They charged forward, catching the soldiers by surprise. Only it seemed the battle was suddenly over. The trife no longer paused to attack the humans. They rushed past them, hissing and screaming in fear, desperate to escape.
Escape from what?
Jaxcluth.
The word meant nothing to Caleb, but it seemed to have plenty of meaning for Ishek. The advocate was afraid, frightened in a way 60,000 trife had been unable to scare him. Caleb could have looked into the Relia's mind for the reason, but he was sure he didn't want to know right now.
The spire, Stacker said. Hurry!
Caleb and Stacker joined the fleeing horde of both trife and humans. Everyone was on the move now, fleeing the walls and the unseen horror approaching from outside the city. They could still hear the groans, deep and loud, like a monster rising from the depths of the ocean. Caleb sped up, getting close enough to Stacker to hear him shouting orders inside his helmet.
All units retreat to the naval yard. I repeat, retreat to the naval yard. Board the nearest ship. You have 3 minutes before we cut the ships loose.
Jaxcluth do not fear the water the way the Uluth do.
Then we need to stop them.
You can't stop them, Caleb. You don't have the means.
Even with the QDM?
Ishek hesitated to answer. That was good enough for him.
There is no guarantee I can make it work. If we linger, we will die.
Then they would die.
He wasn't going to leave innocent people to whatever kind of monster was approaching. They kept running, the groaning sounds increasing in volume, the new creatures gaining ground. Gunfire began to sound again ahead of them. Someone was shooting at something.
"The trife won't go in the damn water," Stacker barked to him. "They're clogging the escape and trying to get onto the ships."
Caleb swallowed hard. He hadn't thought of that.
"Drop them and get underway," he heard Stacker order. "I know. We don't have a choice. Do it. All units keep the trife away from the docks. If you want to save your families, your loved ones, keep them off the damn docks."
There was pain in Stacker's voice. Caleb felt it too. Whoever hadn't gotten onto the ships by now was probably going to die, including them.
"Stacker," Caleb said, "pull your soldiers back, as many as you can, to the spire."
The armored soldier didn't ask any questions. He began issuing the orders.
"Clear the docks and fall back."
At least the path to the spire would have them going against traffic. The dropship swept overhead, plasma cannons firing closer to the water. It passed by and banked hard, preparing for another run. The race took Caleb through familiar city streets. He had spent time at Quantico to the north during his early career and had come south to Norfolk plenty of times. Crossing paths he had crossed many times before, he was shocked by how much had changed, and at the same time how little looked nearly the same. Some of the old storefronts were still intact, their signage restored at some point to near original condition. Trees lined the buffers between sidewalks and roadway, and were stored to like new cars rested at the curbs. On one hand, the sight transported him back to that earlier, simpler time before the trife invasion. On the other, it was a stark reminder of the suffering and pain that had followed, especially as the trife crashed through the trees, tearing off limbs, or bounded over the cars, scratching the finish. It was like watching the start of the invasion all over again. Only worse. The groaning continued to get louder, and Caleb could hear the Jaxcluth approaching now, the sound of moist, slapping flesh overcoming the hissing and shouting and gunfire. Stacker turned left at the next street, bringing the spire into view ahead of them, two blocks away. A number of soldiers were already in the area, gathered around the spire. They leaned against one another or huddled against the wall, tired, bloody, and sweaty. The ones who saw Stacker coming perked up immediately, coming to attention. Caleb looked to the left as they crossed the first street, back in the direction of the wall. An echo of tearing metal rose above the rest of the chaotic noise, and he got his first look at the new threat, the first of too many advancing into the city.
"What the hell?"
he whispered, slowing slightly as his eyes crossed the expanse of tentacles stretching forward from the gigantic monster.
"Jaxcluth, Nyarlath's favorite children. The trife didn't gather to attack this city. They were trying to escape."
30. Caleb. Caleb followed Stacker to the base of the spire. The groaning and slapping sounds from the Jaxcluth pursuing them was louder than ever, the monsters closing on them. The soldiers were all back on their feet by the time they arrived, ready and waiting for orders.
"The control room is inside, straight ahead," Stacker said. "I don't know what you'll be able to do. The system melted down."
A handful of people emerged from the front of the building, uniformed officers carrying rifles. They joined the ragged group on the steps.
"I'm not sure either," Caleb replied. "What about the QDM?
"QDM?
"The power source.
There are stairs to the left. Descend to the bottom and go through the door. We'll hold them off for as long as we can."
"Roger that. Aim for the eyes on the central mass. It'll slow them down."
"Where did you come from?"
Stacker asked, surprised Caleb knew anything about the creatures.
He didn't, but Ishek did.
"Long story," Caleb replied.
"We can get a beer when this is over."
Stacker grunted out a laugh.
"It's on me."
"Roger that," Caleb said as he pushed past Stacker and up the stairs into the base of the spire.
"Which way?" he asked Ishek.
"The energy unit or the control room?"
"Control room. Let us see what we can accomplish."
As Caleb ran through the open door just ahead of him, he heard gunfire begin behind him. The change in pitch of the Jaxcluth's groaning signaled its rage as it came under attack. He knew he didn't have much time. The control room was standard military design. Stations, terminals, displays. The largest hung across the front of the room. Most of the computers were offline, including the large display. The smell of burning circuits hung thick in the air.
Stacker said the system overloaded, Caleb said. That terminal is operational.
Caleb looked at the station in the corner. Its display was still active. He hurried over to it and sat in the desk chair, pulling it forward.
Give me control.
Caleb breathed in, closing his eyes and trying to relax. The pressure in his head built as the Relia advocate seized his mind, taking full ownership of it. Ishek opened his eyes, staring at the display. Humans were so easily weakened without their sight. They relied on vision for too many operations.
We haven't had hundreds of thousands of years of evolution. If you ask me, Relia are primitive relative to their age.
Ishek wasn't going to argue with Caleb. Not right now, anyway. He began tapping on the control surface, using Caleb's understanding of computer systems to navigate this one. He needed to understand how the Spire's energy shield functioned before he could determine if he could use it as an offensive weapon. He pulled up the schematics. The Spire had dense carbon crystals mounted at the top. Diamond silicate, its many facets refracted the energy around the city. It wasn't so much a shield as a web, with gaps too small for anything larger than a rodent to squeeze through. The crystals were mounted to adjustable arms, the web able to be repositioned if necessary. It didn't seem the technicians in charge of the Spire even knew that, but they weren't the ones who had created the tech, were they? Only the caretakers. Of course, the wiring connecting the modulator to the system at the top of the Spire was human-made and couldn't withstand the sheer power required to keep it running while it was under stress. The link was damaged somewhere, and there was likely no way to fix it. But the system hadn't failed. It had been turned off, shut down before it broke completely. Ishek smiled. The humans had done something smart for once.
Does that mean you can use it?
He could use it, but they would only have one shot, and the Spire would likely be destroyed, with them in it.
I'm not eager to die, Ishek said. You'll die anyway if we don't stop the Jaxcluth.
Ishek sighed. He couldn't argue the truth of the situation.
There is one way we might survive, but we'll have to leave the modulator behind. Whatever it takes, Ish.
The advocate sighed again and began tapping on the control surface. He entered the reflector controls, quickly programming in a series of positioning alterations. He glanced up when he heard activity near the door. General Stacker entered the room, trailed by nearly a dozen shocked soldiers.
Sergeant, this is all we have left, Stacker said. I hope you have a plan.
The building shook as the Jaxcluth slammed into it, trying to get inside.
I have a plan, Ishek said. Stay as close to me as you can.
The survivors came forward, huddling around him. Ishek tapped on the controls, his finger hovering over the power transfer switch that would turn the system back on.
Let us hope the system doesn't fail.
His finger came down on the button. A sharp hum immediately filled the room, a massive spike of energy flowing from the modulator up to the top of the Spire. The display changed as it did, showing the output of the energy and the movement of the reflectors.
What's happening?
Stacker asked.
If we're lucky, the Jaxcluth are dying.
The building continued to shake. A deafening roar sounded from outside, along with groaning screams. The seconds ticked past slowly. Ishek watched the progression of the programmed route on the display. 70% complete. The building continued to shake, and the screen started flashing red, the system overloading and beginning to fail.
Come on, damn it. Come on, Ishek said, echoing Caleb's urging.
The inside of the building cracked and started to crumble, a giant tentacle ripping away at the stone, still trying to reach them. Ishek tapped the control surface, increasing power throughout the system.
Increasing? Stay close, he said. Timing is everything.
The display flashed and began to spark and smoke. The soldiers around Stacker were terrified, their eyes wide and faces pale. Ishek drank in their fear, feeding on it. There was no reason not to take advantage of the situation. They needed it to survive. A second tentacle pushed through the crumbling building, reaching out for them. The display went dark. The humming increased to an ear-splitting scream. Something popped, followed by a bright flash of light. Ishek activated the skin shields, using the rest of its stored power to push it out past the gathering survivors, encasing them in a cocoon of energy. The building exploded.
31. Nathan was sure he was going to die. That's what a loud pop and a flash of light usually meant for anyone close enough to be blinded by it. Then again, this was the 7th or 8th time in the last hour he was sure he was about to die, and yet here he was, somehow still standing, in the Spire control room with a featureless black humanoid figure who claimed to be a Space Force Marine. If he hadn't watched the figure save his life, he probably wouldn't have believed any part of that story. Even now, he wasn't so sure. But he wasn't going to question it. Not when Caleb Card was trying his best to save his life and the lives of thousands. He didn't have to be here in the city. Nathan had fought him earlier and chased him off. But why had he run? If he was human, why hadn't he revealed himself then? Maybe he hadn't realized Nathan was human too. The powered armor did give him more of a mechanical, robotic countenance. Either way, he hoped it was a simple misunderstanding. One he wasn't sure they would have the chance to clear up. The building shook violently around them, the ceiling beginning to collapse at the same time a flash of energy washed through him, stopping his breath for an instant. He could see the slight hue of the shield suddenly hovering just in front of his face, enveloping him and his surviving Space Force soldiers. Only a dozen of those who hadn't been able to escape to the ships remained alive, out of over 5,000. The reality hit him like a punch to the gut. So many lives gone. So many still to save. But had they saved them? Was he going to get out of this alive? Did he deserve to? The groaning of the monster outside the control room changed in pitch, and Nathan turned his attention to the pair of tentacles. They thrashed violently in the hole the creature had made in the wall while it screamed outside. His soldiers shouted as a large piece of cement hit the top of the shield, expecting it to crush them instead of rolling off to the side. They cried out again as more of the building came down, smashing into the shield and shedding away. Dust and debris filled the air, the tearing, cracking, and collapsing noises drowning out the dying alien outside. An extra loud crack shook the entire room, and then the ceiling vanished into open air, the upper part of the spire falling sideways. It broke away from its roots, toppling laterally like a tree. Nathan didn't see the impact, but he heard the breaking windows and rending metal as the top of the spire crashed into it.
Up and out, Caleb said, the shield fading away almost as quickly as it had come.
There was something different about the man now. His whole posture seemed off. Uncanny. It shifted suddenly, returning to normal. Had he imagined it?
Come on,
Nathan growled, activating his jump pack and launching himself up to the top of the rubble pile. He turned and bent down, taking his people by the hand and helping them onto the crumbled stone. Caleb quickly scaled the rock, joining him at the top and helping recover the rest of the soldiers.
Armageddon, one of them said.
Nathan looked up for the first time, quickly scanning the city. Whatever Caleb had done with the spire had made a mess of Eden Rise. The buildings were cracked and smoldering, the vehicles were thrown from their positions and burning. And there were corpses everywhere. Trife, mostly, with a few humans mixed in here and there, along with at least a dozen of the odd giant tentacled aliens that had assaulted them.
Pyro, do you copy?
Nathan asked, activating his comm. It crackled inside his helmet, but she didn't respond. He looked up, searching for the dropship. It was impossible to see through the cloud of dust. A loud groan sounded to the east, followed by a second,
At least two of the monsters had escaped the massacre.
We didn't get all of them, Nathan said.
Caleb looked at him. He was trying to hide the truth behind his expression, but Nathan wasn't an idiot. The creatures were tailing the ships. If they managed to catch up to the carriers... Damn it. Nathan knew they should all be dead. Caleb had tried to save them. All of them. It wasn't his fault the plan had fallen short.
We need to get out of here, Caleb said, in case they come back.
Come back, one of the soldiers said. What for? Look at this place. An hour ago, this was a safe haven. My home.
He was distraught.
My wife. My children. I hope they made it to the ships. Or maybe I don't.
The man put his head in his hands and began to sob. What do we do now, General? One of the other men asked. Where the hell do we go?
I don't know yet, Nathan replied. We'll figure something out.
What the hell are those things? A third soldier said. Why are they here?
Yeah, I thought the trife were bad news, the second replied. Nathan looked at Caleb. The so-called Marine sergeant knew something about these creatures. He had told him how to disable them. His attention caused the rest of his soldiers to divert their attention until all eyes were on the black humanoid. Caleb reached back behind his head to the base of his neck and pulled the hood back over his head and down, proving that there was a human being underneath.
I'll be happy to tell you everything I know once we're someplace safe, he said. Everything I've told you is true, Stacker. I'm not convinced you've shown me the same courtesy.
Like you said, we'll settle this someplace safe. Pyro has to be up there somewhere. We need to get into the open for pickup.
What about those two monsters out there that got away? The sobbing soldier asked.
We'll catch up to them and we'll kill them, Hotch. That's what we do. Get your shit together. You can mourn when we're on the dropship.
Yes, General, Hotch replied, straightening up and wiping at his moist eyes.
Follow me, Nathan said, guiding them down off the rubble to a clearing in the street.
They headed west, away from the shore. The groaning sounds faded into the distance, but he was sure he heard the faint sound of screaming through the suit's sensitive microphones. It made him sick. They came across another of the monsters, severed nearly in half beneath a piece of a damaged building. Two of its tentacles were still twitching, the teeth at the ends opening and snapping closed. Nathan stopped a meter away from it to stare. He understood the trife and the others. This was something else altogether. What was this thing? Why was it here, and why now? He hoped like hell Caleb had the answers.
Pyro, do you copy? Nathan asked again, still trying to raise her.
The armor had taken a beating. There was a good chance his comms were damaged. A deep groan caught his attention. He looked up in time to see a tentacle reach over a slab of rubble. Another followed, and then the creature's central mass and huge mouth began to rise. It was oozing a dark liquid, and half its eyes were punctured. Injured, but still very much alive. He glanced at his survivors. Only a couple of them were still carrying their rifles. He couldn't come down on them. He had lost his, too.
Caleb, can you take it down? He asked.
Negative, Caleb replied. The skin's out of juice.
The creature saw them, groaning even louder in response. More tentacles came over the slab as it maneuvered to attack them.
Back, Nathan decided, waving his people away from it. The other way.
They turned around. Caleb took the lead, coming to a quick stop when a tentacle appeared from around the corner of a building.
Shit. Don't these damn things die? Hotch whined.
The two monsters were trying to box them in, but they weren't out of options.
East, Nathan said. Back to the gate.
They ran toward the second monster, turning at the next street and cutting east. The two creatures gave chase, one moving more quickly than the other. It swung around the corner behind them, its body carried forward in an awkward, slapping gait. It was the smaller of the two, but still towered over them, each tentacle nearly twice Nathan's formidable size. The gate was visible ahead, though it hardly resembled a gate anymore. Between the fighting and explosion in the spire, the metal barrier had been torn apart, leaving huge gaps and torn metal scattered around the area. The hundreds of Trife corpses were hardly recognizable, leaving only a field of dark earth and ash and the awful stench of death. Nathan didn't want his soldiers added to it, but what could he do? He had no weapons save the strength of his powered armor, finite compared to the many limbs of the enemy. Even so, if he could delay the creature for a few minutes, he could give them time to get away.
"Damn it, Pyro, where the hell did you go?"
He slowed down, letting the others get ahead of him. Caleb noticed almost immediately, and he turned his head, looking back. It was the expression that told Nathan the man was who he said he was. A warrior. A marine. Caleb was ready to sacrifice himself, the same way Nathan was, to make sure they all made it out. No indecision, no hesitation. Nathan couldn't shake his head in the armor, and he didn't want to call out to Caleb to let him do what he had to do. He had to trust the man would lead his people to safety. He had to know that if they both died, they would all die. Caleb turned his head away again. Nathan pulled to a stop and turned around. The monster was 100 meters back, and it groaned loudly when it saw Nathan stop, lowering its body into a more aggressive posture.
"Come on, then,"
Nathan said, increasing the power output to the armor's artificial muscles. He punched his right fist into his left palm, crouching slightly to wait. Someone started shooting behind him, a pair of rifles sending what was left of their ammunition over his head and into the creature. Nathan looked at his HUD, noticing his men had all stopped moving. What the hell were they doing? The creature groaned in response, raising two of its tentacles to protect its many eyes. The bullets sank into its flesh, slowing it slightly. Nathan took a step toward the alien. Another round hit it, but not from the rifles behind him. From the air. Plasma rained in on the creature, round after round, striking the tentacles trying to protect its central mass. Nathan looked up as the dropship swooped in from the smoke cloud above, slowing and sliding laterally as it moved into position behind him. Nathan began backing away. The second creature was coming, turning the corner behind the first. The dropship continued firing, keeping the enemy at bay, while Nathan turned and ran under the craft as it came to a lower hover, its rear ramp already down.
"Let's move!"
Nathan shouted. He didn't need to tell his people twice. They rushed the ramp, helping one another aboard. Caleb came to stand with Nathan at the bottom of the ramp.
"Taxi service is a little spotty out here," he said.
"Better late than never,"
Nathan said, sharing a grin with Caleb. The ramp was already coming up as the two of them walked up it into the dropship. The craft immediately began ascending, climbing out of the creature's range and blasting away.
32. Isaac. Activating full generator in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Abel reached forward, tapping the button that would send them across 4 light-years in a matter of seconds. Isaac knew what to expect. He had been through it once before. The ship's generator began emitting enough energy to pull at space and time, twisting it out of shape around them and piling one part of the fabric of the universe on top of another. While the fold on the way to Proxima had been nearly invisible, this one was a bit different. It turned the universe ahead into a spiral pattern, shaping the stars in such an odd way that Isaac's stomach immediately began to complain. He wasn't alone. Rico grabbed at her mouth with her free hand, and Abel shut her eyes, turning her head away. Looking somewhere else didn't help the nausea. It continued to increase as the ship guided itself into the fold, an unexpected force pressing in on them and spinning the ship as if it were an amusement park ride. Isaac was thrown sideways by the sudden shift, hitting against the bridge's port bulkhead. Abel was yanked hard into the back of her seat and then forward into her straps, as was Rico at the command station.
"What the hell?"
Drake shouted through the comm. The rest of the organization soldiers were in seats in the common area in front of the bridge. They hadn't buckled in. Traveling through folded space was usually a smooth affair. The ship redirected again.
Isaac barely grabbed onto the side of the command station to keep from being thrown into the rear wall and then dumped forward toward the primary display. It was over in seconds, the ship becoming serene again as the full generators deactivated and space flattened out on the displays. Isaac reached out to balance himself, his mouth filling with saliva as his body threatened to rebel. He closed his eyes and swallowed, fighting the urge to vomit. He opened his mouth to take in more air, noticing the others on the bridge were doing the same. For a second, Isaac thought he was safe. Then a new sensation washed over him, and he dropped to a knee to puke on the floor. He coughed when he was done, his stomach immediately beginning to settle. The door to the bridge slid open beside him.
"You too, eh?" Drake said, looking down at him. "Hell, Abel, you just made half my team wretch."
It took Abel a few seconds to answer while she overcame her own nausea.
"It was the new algorithm. I don't know what that was exactly, but I don't think any of us liked it all that much."
"Did we get to where we were trying to get to, at least?"
"It looks like it," Rico said. "Ship's computer puts us about 5 AU from Earth. We're closer than we expected."
"Updating ETA," Abel said.
"Looks like we'll be there in 18 hours.
Harry said they thought we would arrive in 2 days. That's a huge win."
"Let's hope it's not the only one we get," Drake said. "Ike, there's probably a bucket and a mop in one of the storage compartments back aft."
"Isaac's a VIP," Rico said before Isaac could reply. "Lucius is the rookie. He's got puke duty." Drake laughed.
"I'll make sure to tell him it was your orders."
"You do that."
Isaac got back to his feet.
"I made the mess," he said. "I'll clean it up.
I'm a Space Force Marine, not a delicate flower."
"That may be true," Rico replied. "But we have other business."
She looked back at Drake.
"Lucius cleans the puke. Spot drives the ship. Got it?"
"Yes, ma'am."
"Abel, once you get us tracked for Earth, I want you and Bennett with Ike and me in the conference room."
"Are we in trouble?"
Abel asked.
"We're all in trouble. I lost Austin over this, and I want answers. I think Ike deserves to hear them, too."
"Copy that, Major," Abel said.
"I'm not a major. Special officers don't have ranks, and I was a sergeant before I resigned from the CSF.
"That may be true, but we have to call you something. Ma'am is too formal, Rico is too informal, special officer is a mouthful, and spec off sounds downright dirty. You're part of the organization now, and Hyrie put you in charge of this mission."
"Major it is," Rico said. "You okay with that, Ike?"
"It's fine with me," Isaac replied. "But we didn't ask to be part of the organization."
"Do you want to stop the Relia from enslaving humankind?" Abel asked.
"Yes."
"Then why wouldn't you want to be part of this?"
"I didn't say I didn't want to be part of it."
"So what are you saying?"
Isaac stared at the older woman. He had only known her a short time, and she already tended to make him feel like he was arguing with his mother.
"Maybe we should head to the briefing room," he replied.
She returned a condescending smile. Was she doing it on purpose?
"Give me a minute to lock the path. I'll meet you there."
"I'll give you 5, Rico said.
"Come on, Ike."
She took the lead off the bridge, heading back along the portside corridor to the room immediately behind it. The briefing room was small, with a single round table and 8 chairs surrounding it.
"How well do you know Abel?" Isaac asked as they entered.
"That depends on how you mean it," Rico replied. "She's been in Centurion Intelligence since before my model existed."
It was still hard for Isaac to think of the clones as clones, and that statement made him uneasy.
"How long ago was that?"
"The first Rodriguez came out of replication 24 years ago. I'm 16.
"What is that like, being a clone?"
He paused.
"I'm sorry, maybe that's a rude question."
"It's okay, Sergeant. I know who and what I am, and I'm comfortable with it, even if some people on Proxima aren't. Honestly, it isn't all that much different from your experience as a human. The memories are randomized for uniqueness and implanted. So while I know I've only existed for 16 years in my mind, I've got 28 years of life to look back on. An entire childhood."
She smiled.
"A pretty good one, too."
"But you were made to be a soldier, right?
A Centurion Space Force Marine, she corrected. And I've loved every minute of it.
Because you were designed to love it.
I suppose.
That doesn't bother you?
Why would it? It isn't torture to do what you enjoy doing, whether you were called to it or made for it. As long as you're fulfilling the purpose you're supposed to fulfill.
I'm sorry if I'm being forward or rude. He waved his hands. Everything about this is so new to me. I'm trying to process it all.
I get it, Rico said. I really do. You can't offend me. I want to help you get acclimated. I'd have to say I think my situation is easier to handle than yours. To wake up after 200 years? You're a strong man to still be sane.
I promised my wife I would never give up on Earth. That promise, her memory, those are all the motivation I need.
You're a good man, Ike.
I try to be.
The door to the room opened. Bennett and Abel walked in. They stood at attention inside the door, waiting for Rico to respond.
Relax, she said. Have a seat.
She waited a few moments while they found a place around the table. We can loop the rest of the team in as necessary, but I didn't want either of you withholding anything from me or Ike that may be classified to the others. I'm sure the organization has plenty of secrets.
We do, Abel admitted.
So tell us how deep the rabbit hole goes.
33. Isaac.
It's probably one of the best-kept secrets in the universe, Abel said, her eyes dancing from Rico to Isaac and back. Incredible, considering it's a human endeavor.
She paused, collecting her thoughts.
We don't know when the Relia first arrived on Earth, she continued after a moment. We have a little better idea about the Axon, but only because we found one of their ships, and because Tinker found one.
Who? Isaac asked.
Tinker, Abel repeated. Does the name John Stacker mean anything to you?
Isaac nodded.
He was a USSF general. He refused to be part of the Generations program because he believed we could overcome the Trife.
That's right. Depending on when you went into stasis, you might not know he ended up splitting with the USSF, along with about 50,000 assorted military personnel. They weren't ready to give up on Earth.
I might have joined him if I were awake at the time.
Abel smiled.
I bet you would have. In any case, he had a wife, and they started a family. That family turned into Tinker.
She looked at Rico.
It also turned into a lot more than that.
What do you mean?
Rico asked.
John Stacker's wife, Mary, was a scientist. She was the first person to manage a successful adult replication with an intact memory stack.
She invented cloning?
Yes.
From Earth?
That's right.
John wasn't completely wrong about his ability to manage the Trife.
He set up a base of operations in Norfolk, Virginia, and started launching missions against them. He managed to clear about 100 square kilometers around the city.
That sounds familiar, Isaac said.
Hayden, Rico said.
That's right, Abel replied. Sheriff Duke isn't the first person to try to create a safe zone for survivors. John Stacker did it 200 years ago, and his offspring held it for a while. But the Trife are hard to keep back forever. They recovered all of the territory except for the walled-in portion of Norfolk, until Tinker came along.
What made him different? Isaac asked.
He was a scientist first, a soldier second. He focused on solving the Trife problem from a higher level, which led him to his discovery of the Axon's presence on Earth. He recovered one of their ships from the ocean and harnessed the power of its energy source to create a shield around the city, which he renamed Edenrise.
Hayden told me some of that story, Rico said, after Austin died. They got tangled up with Tinker and a clone of John Stacker.
Isaac glanced over at Rico, surprised by how the two stories were becoming interwoven the more Abel spoke. But there was something there he couldn't quite put his finger on.
Was there some truth she didn't want to admit?
An unfortunate circumstance, Abel said.
Austin's death was more than an unfortunate circumstance, Rico snapped, suddenly angry.
I'm sorry, Abel replied, a poor choice of words.
Austin was a good man, a great centurion. But he was loyal to the CSF, too loyal to trust with our secrets. It wasn't my call to make, but yes, his death was a result of that fact, and I am sorry for that.
Rico leaned back in her seat without responding. Abel continued. The organization spent years in trade with Tinker, shipping him raw materials in exchange for advanced weaponry under the auspices of the Trust. He never knew our goals, and we never knew his. But he was allowed to keep some of the weapons he made. It was all preparation for the day when the Relia truly arrived, and we figured Earth would be more ready if we had a man like Tinker doing what he did best. We never guessed his real motivation until it was almost too late.
And Hayden saved your collective asses, Rico said. And at the same time, might have cost us a chance to escape Relia attention. Would they have been so interested in coming to Earth now if Tinker had succeeded?
They were already on Earth, Isaac said, getting Abel's attention. They were already interested. They have been here for years.
Oh?
Her eyes shifted to Rico.
That wasn't in your report. I may have omitted some details, Rico replied. Care to tell me about it, Ike? Abel asked.
Not really, Isaac replied. You know the pertinent parts, and the rest was dealt with.
And Sheriff Duke is trying to form an alliance with the Axon after he stopped Tinker from doing the same.
From what I understand, Tinker was a madman, Rico said. Hayden isn't. In any case, we've gotten off track. I want to know the history of the organization, not a rehash of how you've screwed things up.
Us, Abel said.
You mishandled the situation with Stacker. You nearly got Ike here killed. I'm sure you've screwed up more than that. If Riley Valentine was part of the organization, she's at least partially responsible for the death of my son, Isaac said. It was her research that got him killed, her research that put me in stasis. And it was her research that nearly gave Aurelia Ancient a foothold on the planet. I'm willing to bet her